Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice.
Hi, this is Rusty May. Welcome to The Conscious Communicator. Thank you very much for joining us on this Sunday evening. As you know, we come here once a week to talk about the different variety of different ways that we can achieve some sort of personal understanding of who we are and our own internal voice. I'm convinced that each of us has something to share, something to offer, and for whatever reason, we tend to be blocked a lot of times in trying to find out who we are and what that meaning is and how we can express ourselves in a way that will be of benefit not only to ourselves, obviously, but to everyone else around us. And in these times, I think it's important that we begin to realize what our gifts are and try and express them in any way we can. Tonight's guest, Geralyn St. Joseph, is joining us from Hawaii. She's graciously come on the show tonight. She's a psychic intuitive. And Geralyn, do you mind explaining to us a little bit about exactly what it is that a psychic intuitive is?
No, I don't mind at all. Thank you, Rusty. There are several different types of psychic abilities, and a psychic ability is merely receiving information outside the norm.
Right.
So some people, when they touch things, they feel a vibration or an energy. There is clairvoyance, which is clear seeing, and that is you get images of things. You see things
right.
Kind of like in your head and your imagination. There's clairaudience, where you actually hear voices, and they're not arguing with you or anything like that, generally. There's clairsentience, where it's just a knowing, like things come out of your mouth. You're like, where did that come from?
Right.
And also mediumship. And a medium is someone who can see people who have passed away. And there's two different types of mediums. One can see ghosts, which is a person whose soul hasn't left the earth plane yet.
Right.
And the other can see spirits whose souls have actually rejoined with the source or gone to heaven or to God or whatever your belief system is. And they can talk to them. Usually those people know a little bit more. The ones who are ghosts usually can't tell you anything.
Right.
They're not a good source for information unless they're in the room when something's going on.
They're like just kind of stuck.
Yeah. They're usually there because of fear, anxiety. What I've come across most is people who are afraid they're going to go to hell. I come across it all the time. And I haven't really hit too many who I know a lot of people believe that they have something that they have to do. Okay. That they have something to do, and I haven't really found that. But those are the different ways that I get my information.
It's interesting to me that fear, you were talking about fear and anxiety is keeping people from making a transition from the afterlife into whatever's next. And that's kind of one of the purposes of this show. I think there's so many people that are out there that are stuck in whatever their life cycle is. And a lot of it has to do with fear and anxiety about being able to move forward or to say something of meaning. Is in your work, is that kind of what you try and help people relieve here in this plane?
Oh, definitely. Trying to find out who you are and so that you're the same person no matter who's in the room.
Okay.
That's the goal.
So you're trying to find some sense of balance or some sense of really personal honesty.
Yes, authenticity.
Authenticity. When did you realize that you had these gifts? And again, you mentioned several categories. Which one in particular is your specialty?
I would say if I had to pick one, my specialty is probably clairaudience.
Okay.
That's the one that's most prevalent. But I receive information in all those layers. And I've been this way since I was a little kid. I kind of started really working with it. I started reading other people when I was 11,
uh-huh.
when I was in grade school, and then I became a professional in 1994.
How did you realize that you had the gift? What was it that let you know? Because I would imagine a lot of people would kind of see it as maybe something that might have been a bit scary or not have really understood it and accepted it and embraced it.
Well, it actually, I think it depends on the way you hold yourself. My parents, I have great parents, and they gave me a lot of self-confidence. And I always knew I was a little bit different, and that was always accepted in my family. So when I went out in the world and I was a little bit different, it was, to me, a good thing, regardless of the way other people reacted.
Right.
And I think because I wasn't afraid of it, and I wasn't afraid of who I was, and I spoke with confidence, then that gave confidence in the other people around me.
Yeah, that's so true. And again, we're talking about trying to find that inner voice. And once you do that, it does become a commanding voice because you're mm-hmm. speaking from a place of, not authority, so to speak, but just a place of personal, there's a groundedness to people when you hear them and you understand that they really are speaking something that is meaningful to them. I think it resonates with a lot of people.
Oh, definitely. And people can feel the truth. You feel it in your solar plexus.
Right.
When your solar plexus get really tight and they kind of back up, then you know that's not a good place to go. But when they open up and you feel more free, then generally the person in front of you is being very authentic.
It's interesting because I work with children, and my normal day job is I'm a school counselor, and mm-hmm. you know, kids can pick up on that a lot of times very quickly. They pick up on true and false, or whether or not somebody really is walking the walk. And for some reason, I think we start to lose that as we get older. I don't know if it becomes part of the convention or part of the idea that you know, you don't want to offend other people or whatever, the
exactly.
political correctness and everything, but people seem to start to lose the ability to speak for themselves, and it's hard to keep that going.
Well, you're taught you have to fit in.
I'm sorry?
I said you're taught that you have to fit in.
Right.
By any means necessary, you have to fit in, and that's not the way it works.
We have a call?
Yes.
Hello, who's this?
Hi, Heather.
Hi.
I was wondering if I could speak with your guest.
Absolutely. Please do. Go right ahead, Geraldine.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi there. Yeah, you do have a nice voice, actually.
Thank you.
I was wondering if I could ask you a question.
Sure.
I'm supposed to receive a substantial amount of money from that of where I live because the building is supposed to be demolished
and rebuilt. But I have no idea when this is going to happen, and I was wondering if you could pick anything up about it as to a time frame.
Well, Spirit is saying it's going to take longer than you think. I'm actually not getting anything coming to you until after the new year.
So it's sometime in the new
months.
Year?
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, I said a form.
But if you want to do a reading, it's better if we do a one-on-one. That way
okay.
we don't take up Rusty's time.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
All right. I appreciate the fact that you called.
Yeah,
no problem.
Thank you.
Thank you
I
so much.
I just didn't want to, you know, bring up a lot of personal stuff on the air.
Sure, right. No. I mean, I think that's the best way to let people kind of get a feeling for what it is that you do. So, I mean, if you're comfortable with it, that's fine with me.
No, I don't mind.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to do that, basically what's going on is there's some kind of haggling going on, and that's going to delay the money. And it feels like the money doesn't come until 2009. It feels to me more like you have money in your hand like in March, which feels like it's a little bit further out than what you were expecting.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Well, that's great. No, I'd love to do that. If you wanted to help some people with their, and anybody that's out there that wants to call in, our toll-free number is 888-228-4494 in the U.S. and Canada, and 877-489-6350 worldwide. So absolutely call in if you have a question for Geraldine. I think it's fascinating. So now, what were some of your earliest successes? Did you start to have, you said you went professional in 94. What were
yes.
some of the first things that started to really let you know that this was going to be the way you were going to spend your life?
Well, some people are born into a profession, and that's kind of what happened to me.
Were your parents involved? Were they clairvoyant also?
Excuse me? My parents?
Are your parents clairvoyant also?
I think my parents are gifted, but they don't really do much with it.
Right.
I see my father doing things, and I'm just like, how'd you know that? He's like, I don't know. You know, like that kind of thing. Like, they don't really hone it. But they're comfortable enough with themselves that they allow it to come through. So, and I have an older brother who's, he's just, his whole presence is just so calming to people. And his wife, too, is just like an angel on earth. They're amazing. And he teaches martial arts in Delaware. And so, but one of my first experiences that showed me that this was supposed to be a vocation was I had to deal with a possession.
Wow.
Back in, I think it was September of 94. And it lasted over 3 days. And a possession is, you can be possessed by any number of things, but this person was possessed by another person who had committed suicide in the place where she was staying. And the girl who committed suicide was very attached, became very attached to the girl who moved in. And she did all kinds of strange things, like turn the lights off and on and doing all kinds of stuff before she actually entered the person. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. So I just had to follow my guidance as to what to do. We tried going to a priest, and that didn't work. You know?
Sweet. We have another caller. Can we go to that
okay,
line
great.
Real quick? We'll come back to, in a sec, Gerald, and hear the end of that story.
Sure.
Hello.
Yes, this is Nick, and I'm calling
from
Costa Rica.
Hi. Oh, thank you very much for calling. Do you have a question for Geraldine?
Yeah, I do. I know she doesn't want to get too personal. I just put my house on the market. Is it going to sell? Is that personal?
That's
is
personal.
It going
it's probably
to sell
very important.
When is
well, will it
to
be
sell?
Selling within the next 6 months?
That's a better question. No.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's within the next 6 months, but it does feel like eight months would be better.
That might be even better, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
One other small thing, you know, I've taken pictures and find many orbs in the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about orbs and who that would be, or is it a spirit?
Well, sometimes it depends on the kind of room you're in and that kind of thing, the type of camera. A lot of cameras will pick up dust, and that'll come up as orbs. Sometimes, though, you do get something that seems to have form, and, like, the way it moves sometimes will give you an idea that it's a little more intelligent. Go ahead.
As one example, I had one picture, and that's the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was like, it was almost like cigarette smoke floating over the left side near my head. And
oh,
it was
wow.
only in that one picture.
Well, that feels like somebody was trying to let you know that they were there.
And my wife
oftentimes, a spirit, if they want to let you know that they're there, will appear in a photograph.
Uh-huh.
Is that why you're
but
selling your house, Nick?
What's that?
Is that why you're selling your house? Because you found a picture like that? You shouldn't let people know that. That might stop the sale process.
No, you know. But to be honest, the main reason why is because as soon as my wife found out they're building a cemetery across the street,
we're gone.
So we got to sell.
Absolutely.
Can I tell you something? Dead people do not hang out at cemeteries.
Oh,
dead
I know
people
that.
Who are ghosts, they do not recognize that they're dead. They will not admit that they're dead. And that's why they're stuck, so they will not go near cemeteries. They hate them.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me, and they'd be nice, quiet neighbors, but I don't know. they're in the process of building it, and I hope it doesn't interfere with the sale of the house. But here in Costa Rica, I don't think people worry about that so much.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it does interfere with it. Yeah, and you could just let your wife know. Dead people don't hang out there.
Yeah. Is there anybody around me that hangs around me, you know, that's crossed over?
It feels like there is. It feels like it's female. They tend to let you know they're there, or they try to anyway. There's some kind of a signal they give you. They're not telling me what it is.
and I don't know what it is.
It doesn't feel like lights flickering. It would be something that, what they're saying is that they want you to tell them what the signal needs to be.
Okay.
So a lot of times with our higher selves or spirits that we talk to, we have a secret signal so that we know exactly who it is that's there, especially if we can't visually see them. And it could be like you see triple digits or you see a blue rose or, you know, they stroke your face or something like that. But they're saying that you need to pick something and tell them what you want it to be and they will do it.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I don't want to take too much of your time.
Thank you for calling, Nick. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good luck selling your house.
Yes.
All right, so back to the story of the possession. Where were we? We were talking about, you said it was the first time you'd ever encountered anything like that.
Yeah, and it really, it's not like you can go home and say, Mom, what do I do with this?
Yeah, what would you do?
So, what I ended up doing was I meditated on it. I asked my guides what to do. And I ended up crossing the ghost over, but I had to force it out of the girl's body because it didn't want to leave. And you want to hear something really funny? The way I knew how to do that logically was because I had just gotten done reading Anne Rice's Tale of the Body Thief.
There you go.
And in Tale of the Body Thief, Lestat switches souls with this guy, and then the guy won't give him his body back, and he's got to learn how to push the other soul out of his body. And they give you, like, exercises to do. And it's supposed to be a fiction book, but it worked. So I'm very grateful to Anne Rice.
You didn't realize you were doing a little on-the-job training there when you were reading her book. Maybe you'll get a chance to talk to her one day and help her to realize she's got some skills.
Yeah, it was just amazing. I was just amazed. It was great.
When you talk about an exorcism, though, is it like what we've been taught on television or something like that? Is it that kind of a possession? You mentioned possession. You didn't mention exorcism.
Yeah, an exorcism is when it's a demon or a non-human life form that's in the body.
Right.
And they're a little bit harder to do, and they can become dangerous, and the key is fear, is they feed off of fear. So The Exorcist is supposed to be based on a true story, and I believe it because all the people around that little girl were afraid. But if you're not afraid and you have the right faith, I guess, and it's not like the right faith as in you believe in Christianity or you believe in this or you believe in that, but I mean just faith in God and the forces around you, you can handle the situation. But I would
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about fear. I mean, so much of what you're talking about in the next dimension kind of individuals, whether it be anxiety and fear keeping them from going to where they need to go, or fear being what they use to feed on other human beings. I mean, I do a lot of work in domestic violence and child endangerment, and one of the things that we teach is the idea that a lot of times victims are identified or identifiable by the fact that they present with a great deal of fear in this reality. And so the perpetrators will feed off of that fear, and it's kind of almost like, you know, a pack mentality that you see with dogs and other things like that, where if you're afraid of an animal, the animal will realize it almost instantaneously. And you're saying the same thing is true of the next dimension, you know, where they will use that fear against you. And never a truer statement than we have nothing to fear but fear itself. I think that is so true, especially right now with the markets crashing and people not understanding the political situation and where we're going next. And, the fact that the last 8 years this country's been dominated by fear, and it's really been a very stressful period of time for a lot of people. And, man, I wish we could get that message out. You know, I mean, that's an important message in and of itself.
Right, and there is a group online, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but I've been getting emails, a group that we're meditating for strength, basically, and just that to overcome all the anxieties of this time, not to feed into, things are going to be bad, they're going to be bad, they're going to be bad, but feed into everything's okay. You know, we have faith, we know that we're okay, and regardless what happens, we're going to make it, and we're going to survive, and we're going to do more than survive, we're going to thrive.
Right.
Regardless of the environment around us, and just having that Buddhist-like peace inside you and having that confidence and that faith that everything is okay.
A lot of what I want to do right now is trying, as I travel around a lot and do assemblies, I speak to groups of kids, and I'm trying to kind of, I think part of me in the back of my mind is kind of interested in trying to awaken some of these indigo children that they're talking about, you know, because I think they're, if they're there, and I believe that they probably are there, you know, we have to create some sort of an environment to release that energy for them, because at some level I think they've denied their gifts, or they've denied their, a lot of what they have to bring, and the environment is not conducive to bringing them out. And if they're there, man, it's time to bring them out. You know, it's time to get
right.
them out
and
here.
And part of it is that the indigos often get medicated because they have more energy and they're
right.
just quicker thinkers. And people don't know how to handle them. They also fight the paradigm, so they try to suppress them, not understanding, you know, that's what they're here to do. I teach Sunday school at Unity Church, Unity of Hawaii, here at Diamond Head on the island of Oahu. And we teach the Uniteens, which is from 8 years old to about 14. And these kids just really soak it up. And one of the things that I've started doing is we do journeying, which is guided meditation or visualization, where we take the kids so that they meet their guardian angel and they've met their ancestors. And today we met our Amakua, which is your family spirit. And the kids really, really enjoy it, and the parents see a marked difference in behavior at school, at home, and they're just really enjoying that the children are being allowed to really explore their spirituality instead of being suppressed.
Yeah, you know, the problem that I think we have in that situation is I don't think conventional religious beliefs or denominations are going to allow that kind of exploration. I mean, one of the things that I have to be very cognizant of when I'm in the schools is to not step on traditional values. I mean, if you start talking too much about meditation or spirituality or anything like that, you'll get parents calling you out of the, you know, calling you up and telling you that that's inappropriate or to not talk about that, because there is a conventional wisdom when it comes to some of those things. And like you said, I think, you know, obviously
the indigos...
A conventional
fear is what it is.
Well, back to what we were just talking about.
Yep. Yeah.
But, you know, I think... We miss the point if we discount them as being, you know, I don't know, the Barack Obama indictment of being a he was aloof, or he was what was the word they were using for him for a while? It's so funny how they pick up on a word and use it. But you know that he was erudite and aloof, and that he made fun of religion and people like that. But I think, you know, I think we might miss the boat if we don't take them seriously as well, because I don't think that do you think that that's what it is? It's just fear and ignorance, and it just needs to be overcome. It's not maybe at some level there's some value to their experience as well.
Oh, I think there's definitely value, because everybody's on they're at a different place,
right?
And you need to come from, I mean, because my background is Roman Catholic.
There
and
you
the
go.
People who really inspired me the most were like Sister Jean and Miss Paladinetti in fourth grade, and they were very, very religious, but spiritual, not just religious, but spiritual. And we find in Unity Church a lot of times that the ones who come to the church with the most, I guess, expressive experiences or whatnot are the Catholics, because of all the ritual, and that they haven't left out, like, the candle magic, using the incense, and doing a lot of the stuff that brings you to that state. And I think religion is important, and I want you to know that here in Hawaii, we are creating an international interfaith conference for 2011, and we're inviting members of every major religion, as well as any religion or any type of spirituality. I am part of it. I'm secretary of the board, and obviously, like, I'm not representative of mainstream at all. And the head of it, the president is a Muslim, and then we have Buddhists, we have Catholics, we have Episcopalians, we have from many, many walks of faith who are putting their two cents in as to how this is going to work. And it's all about bringing people together and helping them understand we're all doing the same thing. We're all reaching for the same sky. And it's just a matter that we're just coming from different angles. And as long as we respect that and understand that, then the world can be at peace.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic myself. It's interesting, my grandmother, who is 96 and a half years old, is in hospice right now, and she was Boston Irish Catholic, and, you know, I was raised in that kind of environment, and it was amazing to me as the dogma, although that was something that I personally chose to walk away from at a certain part of my life, it did maintain her. You know, it was sort of, mm-hmm. and I think my father's the same way, it's a sense of, there's a structure to it and a safety and a security that's associated with it, and I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater because, you know, living in Northern California, I'm surrounded by people who believe that a lot of this mythology and stuff was just sheer ignorance. But I tend to agree with Joseph Campbell. I think I like the idea that it's much more about the mythology as being meaningful and the stories being meaningful in some sort of a humanistic journey in the direction of where we're going, as opposed to something we just want to look at and go, well, it caused wars and people die and those kinds of things. So I'm glad to hear that you guys in Hawaii are working on trying to find a way to bring that all together.
This is really the great melting pot. I grew up in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia, so it was Roman Catholic and Irish Catholic in our neighborhoods.
Right. They're all from D.C., my family, the same way.
Yeah. So it's like the East Coast there. You just have that whole area. It's all Judeo-Christian. And, I mean, I find a lot of people with a lot of faith, and a lot of them will call themselves Catholic or call themselves whatever, yet they follow their spirituality. They'll listen to the leaders, but only to the point where they find that there's truth. And that's the way it should be. Like, the Pope right now is just, he's ridiculous with, oh, anybody who says that women should be priests is going to be excommunicated. It's like, what kind of attitude is that, you know? So there comes a time when the leadership needs to step aside and let the people flourish.
Well, you know, I agree with you 100%. And I will go back to the question of the Indigo Children, because you mentioned that earlier, how they fight authority. And one of the things that I think is interesting in the school system, I am basically an independent contractor that works within the school system, and I will be the first mm-hmm. one to say the school system is a mess. But at the same time, it is the best that we have come up with so far. We are spending billions of dollars on it to try and offer some form of education. How can you try to encourage Indigos to realize, yeah, it's not exactly the way it should be, but what you need to do is you need to, you know, operate within this particular arena for a period of time. It's kind of like being a child. I mean, if you're an Indigo and you realize your parents aren't enlightened, you still have to deal within that environment until you get the opportunity to move on. How do we encourage them, or how can you help me to encourage them to just stay the course? I mean, don't give up because the school system is screwed up and because adults don't have, you know, your intuitions and your empathy and the things that we're understanding that you have. Don't just throw it all away. Figure out a way to get it done, and then, I mean, where, because that's what frustrates me. I'm not seeing the creativity of the Indigos, you know, even in their spare time. Or you would almost think that if they had this sort of thing, that it would be almost oozing out of the sides whenever they had a moment to do it. But, you know, most of the kids that I see, or a lot of the kids that I see, are playing video games and, you know, the joke about eating peanut butter and crayon sandwiches, but it's kind of, there's not a lot of, you know, these kids are just, they're chomping at the bit to get out there and really express themselves. How do we get them to light up? How do we get that blue indigo color to come alive?
Part of it, I think, is parenting. Part of it, I think, is letting them know, with counseling that I do, is that oftentimes one partner will be very resistant and the other partner is very gung-ho. So the partner who's very gung-ho has to learn how to lay it on a table and walk away from it.
Right.
And let the person pick it up in their own time. And when they pick it up and say it's their idea, fine. It's their idea. You can't have ego. And I think that's the one thing that a lot of the children need to learn about, because ego is destroying the world. And they come in, and some of them have these really big egos. Like, I know what I'm supposed to do, and I'm supposed to do this, and I'm supposed to do that. Well, that's fine. How are you going to get there? You need to work from within the system and break it down little by little around you. I mean, I went to a Catholic school, and I started doing readings in school when I was 11. You know, I took my regular playing deck of cards out, and I would read kids in the back of the classroom and stuff, and you know, they dealt
but
with
didn't,
it.
Didn't you at some level, I mean, I feel this way for myself, and I'm sure you're the same way. Didn't you feel at some level that it wasn't really you? I mean, when I'm in the middle of a, you know, an assembly or something like that, and I'm speaking, and it's not like I'm talking, and you guys, I mean, you know, your particular field would call it channeling something else, or, and I don't necessarily think about it in terms of channeling, but I think about it in terms of something is speaking through me. It's not like so much that the message
spirit.
Is mine, it's that the message is mine to give, but it's just like I'm there, it's like I'm the microphone.
Yeah, you're the vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely feels like that. The other thing that I think people need to be aware of is that a lot of times in crowds, in groups, people will be hostile or make fun or do things. I just want everybody out there to know that the ones who do that are the ones that come back to us afterwards by themselves and start asking us questions.
Right.
They're the ones who are the most curious. So
it makes them uncomfortable, I think. You know, and I think at some level, they almost have to make a, because I think their ego, as you mentioned before, is established in a particular environment. And when they hear something that kind of shakes them up, they have to reestablish themselves, or they have to reestablish that egoic self. And they do it in a very public way. And then they come up to you afterwards and go, "Oh, by the way, can you tell me if my house is going to sell?" Or can you, Nick,
exactly.
I'm not making fun if you're still listening. But I'm just using it as an example. You know, it's the exact same thing. You know, it's like, hey, what can you tell me? Because I think ultimately people, I mean, they would love to have somebody tell them something or give them permission to. And I think that maybe in my mind, that's kind of what a lot of clairvoyance may offer to people, is to give them permission to be themselves, or to give them permission to believe in whatever it is they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, I would definitely 100%. The one thing that I do have to say, though, just as a warning, is I get a lot of people who contact me after they've been taken advantage of. And if someone is telling you, if you're going to someone for advice and they're filling you with fear and you're walking away with, like, a rock in the pit of your stomach, that's not the right person to go to. Don't go back.
Right.
And if they're telling you can't tell anyone what they said, or they're asking for copious amounts of money because they need to buy a special golden candle to burn, that's $10,000, they're fake. Even if they gave you some good information, they're not in it to help you. So I just want to put that out there, because I've helped a lot of people who have been hurt by people like that.
Well, that's good. Do you have any, I mean, that's like Jesus kicking over the tables in the temple. I mean, it's kind of the understanding there are people who are spiritual, and then there are people who are entrepreneurial, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you have any other tips for people out there that are listening about going to an intuitive and trying to really get some value out of it?
Well, you should, well, the first thing I would say is make sure you know what you want to know. If you're going, like, I have people who come to me for a general reading once a year, and I'll give them a reading for the year. But most people will go because they're in crisis or something's going on that they're curious about. So write down your questions to make sure you get everything answered. If you have a psychic who's sitting in front of you and they keep just talking about themselves and telling you how great they are and what they're selling, and you're still getting charged for the minutes, you know, you need to walk away from that. It needs to be somebody who you feel comfortable with. It's like choosing a doctor.
Yeah,
you need
or
to
a counselor.
Feel really comfortable. Yeah, exactly. You need to feel comfortable with that person. You need to, what they're saying needs to resonate with you. And that doesn't mean they're not going to say some things that, I mean, I've had clients who have fought with me and told me I was completely wrong, and then called me back a year later and were like, "Oh my God, I can't believe that happened." You know?
Right.
So you do have moments like that, but they should be moments, not where you're sitting down and it's adversarial right from the beginning, or they're manipulating you and getting as much information out of you. Anybody who throws around the word evil, big red flag, because anybody who has any integrity does not throw that word around. It is extremely rare. It's not something that we say, and that's used to manipulate. It's used to create fear.
Right.
So, you know, if your boyfriend left, chances are he left because he doesn't love you anymore. It has nothing to do with somebody else bewitching him, you know, and that kind of thing. So It's kind of sad.
Well, again, if you're out there and you're listening and you have questions for Geralyn, please call us, 888-228-4494 in the U.S. and Canada, 877-489-6350 worldwide. So can you give me an idea, basically, of how a normal session would go if somebody wanted to call you? And the website is Voice of Spirit. At least I have a couple of them up here. You also do some
business coaching as well. Psychic in Hawaii is the best one.
What is it?
Psychic in Hawaii is the one I update the most.
Psychic in Hawaii. If somebody wants to get in touch with you and they were going to have a meeting or what would you call it?
A reading.
An encounter?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I usually,
how would it go? What's kind of the basic outline?
I use several different tools, so it depends on what they feel comfortable with. Usually my most common tool, of course, is my cards. I use a deck called the Oracle of the Triad, which is very rare here in America, but can be found in France. And we do a general reading first. I don't want to know anything. I really don't. I want you to talk as little as possible in the beginning for the first 15 minutes when I tell you what Spirit needs you to know. Because anything that you tell me, most of the time I'm pretty good at keeping, like, putting it out of my head and just relaying the message. But it's natural for a person to analyze things, and I don't want to be analyzing the information to see if it fits what you told me. I just want to tell you what Spirit's saying. So the beginning of the reading will be a general reading of whatever Spirit wants you to know. Once that's done, then I'll ask you if you have specific questions, and then you can ask. And you can ask about other people, and you can ask, you know, how are my kids doing, how about my parents' health, and all that kind of stuff. It really depends on the person what they're going to hear. Because some people come to me and they want a reading on business, and Spirit tells them that their love life needs to be taken care of because they're out of balance. And then we can get into the business stuff because everything is connected. And people need to realize that balance is the key.
Can you do this over the phone? So you do the
cards over the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most of my clients are, I have a lot of international clients and clients on the mainland. And I will be in the Philadelphia area in November. We're supposed to get there around November 21st, and we're supposed to come back to Hawaii around December 3rd.
Well, it looks like you'll be celebrating a World Series victory. Philadelphia is winning 10-2 right now over Tampa Bay in Game 4.
Awesome. Great.
So it's going to be 3-1, it looks like. So anybody that's out there that's a Tampa Bay fan, it looks like you're going to need a big comeback here. It's 10-2 currently, so...
Wow,
you talked about the Oracle of the Triad. Is that similar at some level to tarot cards? Because I've had tarot readings before. Is it similar to that?
It is not. The tarot cards, I do read them and I do teach them. And I have a different way of teaching than most people because there's no memorization. But the tarot is 78 cards, and that's the deck on which your regular playing deck is based. And that's what I started with, reading a regular playing deck. The Oracle of the Triad is a 57-card deck. And it is comprised of different symbols that the gentleman who created it found throughout time and throughout the world. Different things kept repeating, so they created a deck out of it. And it gives a lot of life path stuff, information, what you need to do. But the one thing with when you're reading cards is it gives you a place to start. It's not really, I mean, when you start, you're reading the cards because you're looking at them. But once you get familiar with them, you're throwing the cards down, glancing at them, then you go into the reading.
Right.
It's just giving you a place to start so you know you're keyed into that person.
Now, in terms of the, I was looking at the business stuff. When you talk about doing the business consulting, is that, because I think you mentioned earlier some of the questions that a lot of people ask, how are my parents, you know, how are my parents' health, how are my kids doing? Are most of the questions just fear-based questions? I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way, but come on, that's kind of what it sounds like. You know, is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? As opposed to, you know, hey, is there something that I should, you know, maybe I've got something that I could be doing, or
it's probably,
any kind of like some positive questions?
Yeah, a lot of my clients, especially after they've been my clients for a little while, they are very progressive. So they'll ask, you know, what does Spirit say would be my best course of action for this? Or
in this particular arena.
Exactly. What direction should I go in? Or what is, a lot of people will call me and just say, what does Spirit have to say to me right now? And those are tougher because it's not like you have anything to, to go off on, but Spirit always answers them. So, and sometimes your questions are not answered. I find that sometimes people get obsessive with things, and when they get too fear-based and too obsessive, Spirit won't. Spirit's like, no, that's enough. You need to just stop asking that.
Time out.
Shut down.
Give them a spiritual time out.
And people get mad at me, but, you know, I have to do what Spirit says to do, because if I just, like, they'll keep asking you the same question to try and get you to say what they want to hear.
Right.
And I will not do that. I will answer the same question. I will answer it in a different way, maybe three times, because maybe they didn't understand the first time, or they need more information or whatever. Okay. After the third time, I will not answer it again. It's like, no, you need to move past this. We already answered this. You know, plus they're paying for their minutes, and I feel like I'm cheating them if I just keep answering the same question over and over again.
Spirit,
you know,
is saying move on. That's what Spirit's
yes.
saying. You talked about honing your skills, and mm-hmm. certain people out there maybe have a feeling that possibly they have some, you know, strengths in these areas and stuff like that. If somebody's thinking that they have some clairvoyance or some understanding of other people, how would they go about honing their skills?
Well, what I did was, the first thing that really caught my attention was I read The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield.
Very good book.
And when I read that in 1994, I read it in like 5 hours.
Didn't you think you were going to disappear at the end?
Yes, I did.
Didn't you think you were just going to like do the same thing? You're like, when am I going to disappear?
I'm just going to, yeah, vibrate off the earth.
Vibrate off the earth? Come on, man, I'm ready.
Just vibrate right off. But after I read the book, I was like, oh, my God, there's people in the world who actually experience the world the same way I do. It was a real eye-opener for me, and that's when I became a professional around that time. So what I did was I created a class called Completing the Circle that goes through all the steps I went through to make myself feel whole. Because as a teenager and a young adult, I always felt very empty and alone and just, it was a horrible feeling. I just felt cold and empty, like I didn't really experience emotions very fully. And I believe it's because I shut off, I shut down Spirit. I wasn't connected. So I had to go through this process to become connected and to stay connected consistently. I had a practice. It's like an exercise. I do white light meditation. And that way, when you become that sensitive, then you know when you're cut off, when things, you know, are not working right. And drugs will do that. Alcohol will do that. And that's what sin means. Sin means without. It means without God. It means to cut yourself away from the source.
So the meditation practice is basically the idea, is pretty much what you do to keep yourself in touch?
It's part of it. It's a whole series of things. It's I sent you the first lesson, which was
right.
Do Thyself. The second lesson is Take Your Power Back. The third lesson is Life with an Aerial View. And then there's three other lessons after that. So there's 6 weeks. And some people do it in 6 months because they like to really do the lessons. It took me a year altogether to go through the entire process and really feel solid. And I don't meditate all the time anymore, but I do go back to it, and it makes me feel better. But I feel connected all the time. I always have this undercurrent of joy where I always feel excited. I never feel alone. I don't understand when people say that they're lonely. I understand it on a logical level, but I have not felt that in so long that I don't even remember what that feels like.
Well, I tell you, it's interesting because on Sundays, which is the night we do the show, I always notice that about, because I'm not very close to my family. I grew up in a very close family, and my brother's down in San Francisco. It's as close as I am. But I always notice on Sundays I kind of have that little bit of a loneliness feeling that kind of creeps over me because I just feel like I'd like to be around these other people. It's interesting. That must be nice to not have that feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I don't miss anybody. I miss my parents. I miss my brothers and my sister. But it's not the same. I feel like I connect with them at any point. I just reach out psychically and emotionally, and I can feel them. And I feel that connection. And it is a good feeling. And it's good that no matter in what situation I'm in, no matter what is happening to me, I can tap into that, and I know everything's going to be okay.
So do you have a sense of the evolution of consciousness that a lot of people are talking about with this? I think people are attaching it to 2012. I think people are attaching it to man, this, we're going through some challenges in this country, and so we're going to have to find some other reason to be focused or whatever. But do you, as an intuitive, do you, are you getting a signal from spirit that, that maybe we are in fact, not we, because I don't include myself in that conversation,
well,
but
the country
that people
is
in fact becoming more conscious?
They're being forced to, whether they want to or not. There's, it's almost like a great cosmic smackdown, and Katrina was part of it. The earthquake with the huge tsunami, that was part of it. The earthquake here that happened October 12th last year, was it last year, the year before, was part of it also. These are wake-up calls, and if we're not doing what we're supposed to, it'll get progressively more persistent. And I think with everything going on economically, basically the message is greed doesn't work. We need to go into a system of fellowship and family. And I don't mean in a communist kind of way, like you should be rewarded for your hard work and not have to share it with the guy next to you who decides that he's not going to work. But in a way that we take care of one another. You take care of your siblings the way the ghettos used to be. I remember growing up in South Philly, if somebody was having a hard time, the neighborhood really came together and took care of that person. There was none of this, you know, where, oh, well, you know, his family's not eating, they better go to the food bank kind of a thing. It was, you know, the neighbors all took turns feeding you. If somebody died in your family, your neighbors came in and they really took care of the family. And we need to go back to that. And in some places it never existed. There's always been that aloofness. We need to figure out that we are connected, that we cannot, no matter how much technology we try to put between us, we're connected, and everything we do affects everyone around us and then some. It's like the butterfly effect.
Yeah, but you got a problem, so you're gonna write a book called The Cosmic Smackdown, because I think that is the funniest thing I've ever heard. So that you got to write. If you don't, I'm going to steal it from you, and I'm going to put it on something, because it's exactly right. But even science and technology, the quantum uncertainty theory is starting to lead us to believe that even at the highest levels of understanding, that we realize the connectedness of everything and how we can't, you know, the wave particle duality. And I'm listening to something right now talking about Einstein and some of, and I don't, you know, quantum physics is way outside. I like to listen to it just so it kind of interests me. But at the same time, I think the realization, even from Einstein's perspective and why he was so passionately against quantum theory toward the end of his life, was that he just didn't believe in indeterminism. I can't say that word, but it's the idea that there is something that is out there that is that's affecting the outcome, and that there is sort of an understanding. So I don't know that it necessarily needs to be just a spiritual approach. I think we're starting to find that from a scientific approach as well.
And I think it's the mixing of all. You know, science does not have to be counter to religion. Like the way some of these southern states, I mean, I'm flabbergasted that there are still places where they fight against the education of evolution. Okay, teach both. You know, it is possible that both occurred. You know, that in the Quran it talks about the creation of the earth, and it talks about, it says that a day for God is eons for humanity. So if you look at it that way, and they talk about the steps of creation and it being millions of years each step, then each day is millions of years, and it makes sense.
Right.
You know, then Genesis makes sense. And a really good book that I read recently that's just coming out, I helped to edit it, is called Islam, A Religion of Peace. And the author, Salim
Ahmed... It's not going to sell that well. I'm sorry. I don't mean giggle again, but it's just not going to sell that well right now, but I like to hear about it.
Is he talks about, he gives the argument for and against and why, what's going on in Islam today. But he also talks about different things in the Quran that are scientifically proven now. And it's really interesting. And he's got another book called Beyond Holy War and Sacred Veil, or Beyond Veil and Holy War, or something like that. And that one compares the Bible to the Quran. It's just fascinating. Fascinating information. And I think people need to be educated before... hate is all about ignorance. And fear is all about ignorance. We fear what we don't know, what we don't understand.
But, you know, you talked about the fact that you have clients that come to you once a year for a reading. And one of the things that really pisses me off about the idea of some sort of a intuitive wisdom that comes down either through Muhammad or it comes down through the authors of the Bible or wherever it happens to be, the fact of the matter is that it can't be updated. You know, the idea that it was given and therefore in its original value that it was pure and perfect and it didn't need to be reestablished or rethought out or talking about the Pope saying that women can't be. I mean, you know, to go that far backwards and to say that, it was written 2,000 years ago that this was truth. I mean, I feel the same way as sort of a pocket philosopher. I love the Socratics and I love the Greeks and I love what they had to say, but to think that that's the be-all, end-all of the conversation is kind of, that's frustrating. You know, you can't update that. You can't think about, hey, what is the Talmud, 2009 or, any of those things. You know, why aren't we updating it? Why did it come out like, and then all of a sudden that was it? You know, that was, because I would imagine that the people of that time were some, psychic intuitives. These were people that were in touch with whatever was going on, but, things change, don't they? Or
the fundamental truths don't. Like, honor your mother and father, and don't lie, and don't cheat, don't steal. Those kind of things don't change. They stay consistent. The basics stay consistent. The details change, and from what I really shouldn't be talking about the Quran that much, but I just read the book, so it's on the top of my head. In the Quran, they say that God sends a messenger for every time and every people. So we each have our own, and they're all equally important. One of the things in the Quran that I've been arguing with my friend about is there's a line that says that Muhammad is the seal of the prophets. And I told him, well, that just means he's the epitome. I said, it doesn't mean that he's the last. I said, why would they say in the beginning that there's a prophet sent for every place and every time? And then at the end, they contradict themselves. I said, that doesn't make sense. So he's like, well, I'll have to write a book on that.
That's the Holy War, the end war.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, and the Bible is being updated all the time. I mean, the basics are still there. But
not by Catholics.
There's 240 different versions of the Bible. There are some versions of the Bible that are updated every year.
But you talk about honoring your father and mother, and not stealing and those things like that. In my world, I work with kids whose parents are absolute and total meth addicts. I mean, they are completely and totally prostituting their children, or they're doing whatever they can to get money, and they're leaving these kids in harm's way, and these kids are stealing to try and get food. Those are relative terms to me. They don't resonate in the world that I work in. These kids aren't dealing, honor my father and mother, screw my father and mother until they get their shit together. And I apologize for my honest but the reality of the situation is that there's a lot of mothers and fathers out there that suck. And they are not very good at what they do. And if the Indigos are out there, that would be the first place they'd be looking at to say, you know what? That's not right.
Change this. Exactly.
I mean,
well,
my parents
the father
are not
and the mother
what I want
could
them to be.
The father and the mother could be spirit and earth. I mean, it depends on how you interpret the language. The other thing is to honor your father and mother does not necessarily mean that you have to lay homage at their feet, but just love them no matter what and rise above the situation, which I know is very difficult for a child. But as you know, as much as a child may dislike what their parents are doing or it's hurting them, there's a piece of that child who still seeks their approval and who still loves them.
Absolutely.
So it's more about how you deal with that emotion and how to rise above the situation than it is just, I'm lucky because I have great parents. I really am. I say it all the time. My father is an absolute saint. My mother is just, she's wonderful. She's a little wacky sometimes, but she's an excellent mother because her children come first. And I know I've seen the kids that I've worked with and some of the parents I've worked with, because I do parent coaching too, they just don't get it. Like, they just don't have that maternal instinct or whatever it is that makes a parent so fall in love with their child that nothing comes between them and the child.
Right.
And I think our society builds that and breeds it. What I notice here in Hawaii, which really baffled me, is a lot of the men really don't see any value at all to raising children. There's no value in it. You're supposed to hand them off to a stranger, and that's it. You know, you see them for dinner time, you get them on the weekends, but that's all the interaction you need, because your wife needs to be making the same amount of money as you do, otherwise she has no value.
Right.
And you need to be making that money too, otherwise you have no value. So it's not like, oh, the wife can make 100 grand a year and the husband stay home and raise the kids. No, there's no value in that. And as a culture like that, really, and I'm not saying everybody here is like that, but I've come across it a couple times when I've done counseling. And it just, it baffles me. It's like the nuclear family is gone. It's destroyed.
Yeah, but you know,
and
what? I think about it. People tell me that all the time. You mentioned it earlier. You got to rely on the parents. You got to do this. And people tell me in education, you know, you got to rely on the parents. You got to do, you know, that sounds like somebody in the 1950s saying, you know, this generation of kids is completely screwed up and we need to go back to what it used to be like. And it, you know what? I can't count on the parents. I can't. That's
right.
Really not, I don't assume that that's, you know, a luxury that I have. I don't have the luxury of being able to count on them. And so therefore I take it as I'm going to talk to you directly. And I'm going to try and find words, because, you know, again, the paradoxical words of, you know, and you explained it perfectly, honor your mother and father as being, you know, a relative term in terms of heaven and earth or nature and earth or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, kids are looking at that stuff and they're only in their concrete brains up until the teenage years, and they move into the amygdala and then they become emotionally overloaded. They need real concrete day-to-day words, and that's one of the problems that I think that people have with a lot of philosophy and so forth. It's so hard to read. You know, it's like it's filled with contradictions. It's filled with all those wonderful, mind-challenging kinds of ideas, but there's a lot of people out there that just can't read between the lines. And
exactly.
We need to make it simpler. You know, we need to make
literal.
It really simple.
Well, one of the things I've done, work with kids that I work with, is just getting them to look at a situation differently.
Right.
It's harder with your parents. I'm not saying this is necessarily going to help with their parents, but so far as dealing with peers and bullying and things like that,
right.
How to change a situation with words to knock the other person off balance so that you then have a stronger foothold. One of the things is to bring humor into the situation. Or just to say something to the person. I was bullied a lot when I was a kid. But it didn't affect me the same way. Like, I didn't feel victimized. I wasn't afraid to go to school. To me, it was a challenge. It was like, oh, you know, who's going to pick on me today? And what do I get to say to them and make everybody else laugh, you know, kind of thing. And one of the things I have told my daughter to do when she's been harassed is just to say, you know, you feel sorry for the person. And it usually, like, stops around the track. What do you mean? What do you mean? You say, well, you must really feel bad if you feel like you need to make me feel bad in order for you to feel better. I'm really sorry that you feel like that. I mean, and from first and second grade, there are concepts and there are things that we can teach the kids how to get around the lower thinking that they grasp and that they can help other kids start thinking differently. And the best way to get somebody to start thinking differently is to ask questions and to make them start questioning. And I
start
found
questioning
that to be
what their ideas are.
Uh-huh. What do you really believe? One of the things I love talking to Jehovah's Witnesses. I love it because it makes me really define my faith. And when I start asking them very logical questions, then they start thinking about, you know, what really is their faith? What are they following? You know, where are things going? In Colorado, I had a wonderful friend who was a Jehovah's Witness who started coming to the house, and my aunt would go hide, and she'd tell me, go get rid of them. And I would sit there, and I'd talk to the lady for like 45 minutes, and I was helping to run a Unity church there, so I would give sermons twice a month. So she would give me great Bible quotes and stuff to go with my sermon. And by the time I left there, we were in Colorado a little under a year, she was bringing like 12, 13 people with her to talk to me. And they were all young people. They were all teenagers. And we would sit and we'd have these discussions. And it was awesome because they were thinking. They were questioning. You know, and it was very, you know, because I didn't look at her with disdain and run inside the house or try to get rid of her. You know, okay, let's talk about it.
Yep.
What do you really think? What's
yeah,
really going
question.
On here? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, our time is up, and I can't thank you enough for joining me tonight. It's really been fun talking to you. For those of you that are out there, if you want to get a hold of Geralyn St. Joseph, you can check out www.psychicinhawaii.com. She has her phone number there on the site and also ways to contact her. And we will be back with you next week to talk a little bit more about different ways of finding the path to your internal voice, trying to get rid of some of the blocks that are stopping you from being the person that you want to be. And I thank you very much for joining us. And thank you very much for, I think it was Nick and Heather that gave us a call tonight. That was fantastic.
Yes. And can I plug my brother shamelessly real quick?
Absolutely.
My brother's Thomas St. Joseph, and he's in Delaware. He has a martial arts studio, and he specializes in training women and children. And you can find him online if you Google Thomas St. Joseph, FT period Joseph, or go on voicesspirit.com, and he's one of the links there.
Great.
So he's in Delaware. Thank you so much,
Russell. Thank you, Geralyn. Have a great
night. Thanks.
Thanks, Don.
What's the score?
It's over. Philly won.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Come to the end of another hour here at the Conscious Communicator, and I can't thank you enough for joining me on this journey. Your phone calls and emails are greatly appreciated, and if you like what we're doing, please invite a friend to join us. This is a conversation that needs many voices, and as we open up the possibility of conscious communication to more and more people, the results will be a freeing of the true self from the burdensome armor of ego, and a flowering of the potential that is available to all of us. Until next time, peace out, travelers. The rest is still unwritten.